Well, just last night I saw part one of The Hobbit, the new film, and a couple weeks before, I just finished rereading the book, which I'd read when I was a kid, and reread it in advance of the film. Now, I'm sure by now everybody knows that J.R.R. Tolkien, the author of The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, was a Catholic, and a very devout Catholic, and Catholic themes are pretty apparent in this literature. Once you get that, you begin to see them everywhere. And I'll just highlight a couple things from The Hobbit. There are a lot of things we could talk about. And as the series unfolds, but maybe I'll do some more of these commentaries. Here's the first thing. The Hobbit, in many ways, is like Moby Dick or like Star Wars or many other stories of a coming of age. So think of, you know, Luke Skywalker is drawn out of the comfort of his aunt and uncle's home and then brought on this great adventure, and he comes of age in the process. Or in Moby Dick, Ishmael, you know, is going through kind of a crisis, and he goes on this great adventure, and during the adventure, he comes of age. So that's a standard story. And The Hobbit has many of those elements. So it begins with Bilbo Baggins. Now, he's 50, but that's young for a hobbit. Hobbits lived a long time. So he's, you know, still a young man. And he's ensconced in a very comfortable hobbit hole, which is described by Tolkien with great affection. And then it's portrayed by Peter Jackson with great detail. Comfy, cozy, comfortable, warm hobbit hole where he can read and he can smoke his pipe and he's very, very comfortable. Well, into that world comes Gandalf. And, you know, I won't give the whole story away, but he brings with him all these dwarves, and the dwarves want to recover their treasure that was stolen by this dragon, and they've got to go on this great dangerous adventure. But see, Gandalf, who's kind of an angelic figure in Tolkien, he stands here, I think, for the invasion of grace. He's a figure from a higher world, and he comes crashing in to Bilbo's comfortable world, and Bilbo is put off. He wants nothing to do with it. I don't want adventure. I don't know who you are. I don't know who these people. He's resistant. And that's a commonplace of coming-of-age stories, that the person wants to stay in a comfortable world. There's wonderful details as the dwarves are kind of invading his space, and Bilbo's very worried about his china, and when the plates break, and that's my grandmother's plate. And at one point, one of the dwarves is using a doily as a napkin, and Bilbo, that's not a napkin, that's a doily. Well, it's a very kind of, you know, cozy, comfortable little world that's being interrupted. So it often goes with grace. Now, what's Gandalf calling him to? An adventure. That word's used a lot. You know, and Bilbo, when he finally agrees, he shouts out to his townsfolk, you know, I'm going on an adventure. But see, it's more than just an adventure. It's a journey of maturation. You have to break out of your cozy little self-regarding world, and you have to go on an adventure that calls you to self-sacrificing love. There's the Christian part of the story. Now, see it, by the way, in biblical figures like man. See it in Moses, you see it in Jacob, see it in Joseph, over and over again. People called out of their comfort place onto a great adventure. So Bilbo now has got to go out. And with these dwarves and with Gandalf, they confront lots of evil. Now, in the form of trolls, they deal with first. They deal with orcs. They deal with goblins, all sorts of you know, evil figures. Now, what do they stand for? They stand for evil in the world. So we all know, biblical people know through ordinary experience, that the world is full of evil. The adventure is to find your mission to confront that evil, to battle it. In that process, you become an adult. You become mature. Now, that's Luke Skywalker having to confront, ultimately, his father. You know, that's any of these stories. So Bilbo now is battling all these forces. Gandalf is, again, this angelic figure, kind of a wisdom figure, and he makes a very important observation. He says, evil is always trying to implant itself in the world, and your job is to battle it. But he says, very often people think you battle it through power, when in fact, Gandalf says, the best way to battle it is through simple acts of love and kindness. Saruman appears in this story. Now, in The Lord of the Rings, he's kind of gone over. I'm mixing my metaphors here to the dark side. He's become more of a wicked figure. In this movie, he's on the edge. And Saruman sees, oh yeah, we have to fight evil, but we got to do it through power. Gandalf knows, and this is much more of a Christian, biblical idea, better to fight it through a simple act of love, simple act of kindness. A very good example now of that is in The Hobbit. Gollum appears. So we know Gollum from Lord of the Rings, this wicked little figure, you know. But we discover him now in The Hobbit. He has the ring. He loses the ring. Bilbo gets it. And he's wicked. He's objectionable in every way. And at one point, Bilbo is invisible. He has the ring on. So Gollum doesn't even see him. And he has his sword. Bilbo has the sword. He could just as easily as that kill this nasty little wicked figure. But he doesn't. He doesn't. It's a pity that he shows to Gollum, which is now repeated in Lord of the Rings by Sam and by Frodo. They both have opportunities to kill Gollum. They don't do it. Well, as we know, when that story comes to its climax in Lord of the Rings, when they're just about to destroy the ring, but then Frodo gives in, and it's Gollum comes, remember, he bites his finger off. If Gollum had been killed earlier on, if no pity had been shown, he never would have been around to solve the problem ultimately at the end, because, of course, he tumbles in and the ring is destroyed. The point there is that simple acts of love and pity are ingredient in the divine plan in a very powerful way. It's not through worldly power so much that we conquer, but by these simple acts of pity and kindness. Very strong Christian theme. Here's just the last one, and there's so many more we talk about, and as the series unfolds, I guess I will, but the goal of their quest is to recover their lost treasure, which had been stolen by this great dragon, you know. And it's a beautiful symbol. The dragon has taken all this gold, all this treasure, but what does a dragon do with it? He can't benefit from gold or goblets or treasure, but yet he sits on the pile, and he, with great care and defensiveness, holds off any antagonists, you know. It's called the dragon sickness in Tolkien. He saw it, I think, as this gross materialism that has conquered so many people, especially in our contemporary culture, that we become so obsessed with wealth for its own sake, that even when we can't use it, even when it's not really benefiting us, but yet we cling to it, we hang on to it. It's exactly what the classical tradition calls concupiscence, which is this errant form of desire. Is that I want, and I'm gathering all this of wealth that I can't use, but I'm going to sit on it and defend it with my life, you know? Watch now as the story unfolds. This first movie ends right there. Story unfolds that the dwarves, human beings, Bilbo himself, are drawn into the power of the dragon sickness. Bilbo is going to save the day. I don't want to give away too much of the story yet, but we'll save the day not by a great act of acquiring, but by a great act of giving away. Just as his nephew Frodo in the next set of stories. It won't be by grasping the ring, but by giving the ring away that the world is liberated. That's a deeply Christian idea, isn't it? A deeply biblical idea. Not by succumbing to the dragon sickness and accumulating wealth, but precisely by giving our lives away, giving wealth away. In those and many other ways, you'll see very strong biblical and very strong Catholic themes in The Hobbit.